I'm Lights, Camera, Jackson. This is a new episode of the LCJ Q&A podcast. Thanks to everybody out there for listening, especially to all of you on Spotify and Google Podcasts. Welcome to all of you, and I welcome with me Sergio Pablos, the director of Klaus, the new Netflix animated movie. It's in select theaters now, and it's everywhere on Netflix on November 15th. Sergio, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
The Santa Claus Story. It is so iconic. What inspired you to put a new stamp on it with this movie?
Well, I thought I found an angle to tell it in a different way. I thought that, if I could find this angle that would make the story not sappy, but, you know, witty and ironic, but also have a heart, that would be the way to go about it. And I started playing with this idea that maybe Santa is not our main character. How about we make this other guy, this postman guy or main character, someone who actually needs to learn a lesson about altruism. And I started discovering that, you know, this duo really led itself to an interesting story, so that's why I went for it.
Yeah, you've got Jesper, who is voiced by Jason Schwartzman, and you have got Klaus, voiced by J.K. Simmons, Academy Award winner for Whiplash. Let's start with Jason Schwartzman. What made him right for the role of Jesper?
Well, he was actually essential to the role because we took a while to find the character. I've been in movies before when you have your main character be one of these, morally reprehensible characters, you know, filled with flaws, and then you run the risk that the audience may actually not like him. And if they don't like him, they will not go along for the ride with him. So we have to find a sweet spot where, even though we have a character who's at face value not likable, he still had to be likable. And that's when Jason came in, and we batted around for a while trying to find a character. But he was the one that literally found that sweet spot, and he made it work, you know. So Jason was great. He was a great improviser. A lot of the lines that ended up on the film were not as scripted. I mean, he just went with it, and we ended up finding way better stuff to work with by working with Jason.
That's great. Yeah, he was also really good in Fantastic Mr. Fox, one of my favorite animated movies of the past decade. And when it comes to JK, I mean, he's got that deep voice, and he can be sinister depending on the role. He can be kind depending on the role. When it comes to this character of Klaus, you know, I was surprised by some of the dramatic elements with this character. Was he surprised as he was reading the script and figuring out this character? Was he surprised by it all?
I don't think we ever had a conversation like that. I mean, the thing is, he read the script and he said yes, so I'm assuming that he did find something in it. But, I mean, the reason why we cast him in the first place is because we needed that range. We needed somebody who could go, you know, the whole range from scary in the beginning to extremely relatable and sweet. And JK has that immense likability to his voice that just made it work perfectly, you know. And he's also an amazing professional. I mean, he usually got the take right on the first take. And we wouldn't then say, well, do it again a few times because we're paying for your time and we don't want to look bad. So, but he was great. I mean, he was incredibly home in on the character, and he would always often find ways to do the takes that we were not anticipating, and that made us change how we were actually board the film and eventually tell the story.
Yeah, that's good to hear. You also cast a lot of child actors because there are a lot of children, and some of my favorite scenes in this movie involve children getting excited about writing the letters to Klaus and getting excited about receiving the toys. How was it casting the child actors and working with them?
Well, I mean, the credit goes to our casting directors who did a fantastic job in finding a good range of children from several ages, you know. But I couldn't always be present in the room. Sometimes we had to do the recordings remotely from Spain. So we had to rely on the great aid of Kelly Willis, who was handling the children and kind of making sure that she got the right energy from them, you know. So, I've worked with children characters before that were voiced by adults, you know, because it's sometimes easier. But I just really wanted it to sound authentic, you know. And we recruited as many kids as we could because even my own kids are there. You know, yeah. We whatever worked, right? Whatever got it to work. But yeah, we we've been told that children work particularly well as voice acting, which is great.
So this story, it's about Jesper, who goes to this very, very remote town, and all of a sudden the spirit of Christmas is there through his actions and through the actions of Klaus. I'm curious to know how personal this story is and how much you relate to either Jesper or Klaus or one of the characters in the film.
Well, I think they all have something of me in them. The driving force behind it, the underlying theme is happiness. I mean, at face value, it is kindness. Kindness is the message we're trying to convey. But what we have is a range of characters that all have a different relationship towards happiness. You know, Jesper, someone who starts as a spoiled young, you know, kid who's just always had it easy in life, and he actually places his happiness in luxury around him, what he owns, what he has. And he needs to learn the lesson that happiness is actually in giving, not having, right? Hmm. Klaus is a character who knew happiness and lost it.
Right.
And kind of took himself away from the world. And we spend a good length of the film just showing how he gradually comes out and eventually becomes something a lot closer to the Santa we are expecting, right?
Hmm.
Rashida Jones played Alva, who's a character who was sent to this town to be a teacher, and then she found out that nobody sends her kids to school in this place, and she kind of lost hope and over being that teacher that she wanted to be. And we do also, you know, see how she transforms and she finds that happiness. And the clans who are the antagonists in this story, who perpetually fight in this town, find happiness in making others unhappy.
Mm.
Right? So it was all about how do I transform all of these arcs throughout the film and weave them in an interesting way.
Yeah, and I'm really glad that we take it from this delivery service mailman perspective, because ever since I was young, and I talked about this with a few people recently, I loved getting mail. I still love getting mail, getting packages, receiving them. And I think it's really cool that you're incorporating this into a film for families and for children especially, and also the idea of having them physically write a letter to Santa Claus. That's really good, I think, that you incorporated all that.
Well, thank you. Thank you. That was important part of the film, was to make sure that the power of communication was present and mail was our symbol to it.
That makes a lot of sense. We're with Sergio Pablos, the director of Klaus. You are a 2-time Annie Awards nominee for character animation and design. I would not be surprised if you are back on the ballot this year for Klaus. What were some of your goals as far as the looks of Jesper and Klaus and the characters in the film?
You can see that there's a heavy influence of Disney films in this one, because I spent a long time working for Disney. So their style became part of my own style, and it's hard to dissociate it now. But it was more than a choice. It's like, well, that's what I do. That's my style. And then I recruited the help of others to help me shape it. You know, the design for Jesper came by fairly quickly. I did a quick doodle, expecting it to be the first of many, but it seems like the team kind of liked it and they went along with it.
Yeah.
So we never really evolved farther from that. Klaus, we actually got several designers on top of that character, just trying to find that perfect version of Santa that's not exactly what you would expect. We wanted somebody tougher. We wanted somebody who at first glance would be more intimidating, but we wanted to capture the soul inside of his eyes, which took a long to figure out those eyes. How could we really make him expressive and show the audience there's more than meets the eye to this guy.
Mm.
So yeah, that's about it.
Okay. And the majority of this movie is hand-drawn, but it's not the kind of hand-drawn like when you worked at Disney on Hunchback of Notre Dame and Tarzan in the 90s. How did this animation truly come together?
Well, you'd be surprised to know a lot of it is exactly like those films.
Huh.
You know, like most of it is actually done exactly the same way. The only evolution is that we no longer work on paper. We work on digital tablets, right? We do a drawing on Cintiqs these days, but it's still the same process. What we did is we asked the question, how could we integrate characters and backgrounds for the first time in a seamless way, so it did not seem like in the past, like they were not done by the same hand, right?
Mm.
So, and we realized that a big part of that was the light. The light that affects the background needed to affect the characters exactly the same way. So we went about developing tools to be able to allow artists, not computers, but artists to put light on top of moving images. And it's a very manual process, but it's also aided by great technology as well, you know. So it turns out that, you know, people who already know how to paint light only needed the right tool to be able to do it, and that's what we gave them.
And when it comes to the action sequences and the chases in Klaus, they're sort of Looney Tunes-esque. I know you were inspired with the look of the characters by Disney. Are there some Looney Tunes influences in there as well?
I'm sure unconsciously there's plenty of it. I mean, you know, I'm old school, so you have the influences from a lot of that, you know. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely a bit more slapsticky that, you know, especially with the clans, with the antagonist characters, because they allow themselves for, you know, they lend themselves to it a lot more. So yeah, whenever we saw an opportunity for, you know, broad comedy, we would use it.
Sure, sure. No, that comes through. It absolutely does. I got to ask you, since you are the creator of the Despicable Me franchise, you know, this is a decade in now, and Minions 2 is on the way for next summer, and it's all still really going strong. I got to tell you, I remember going to an advanced screening of the first Despicable almost 10 years ago, a couple weeks before it opened, and after watching it and watching the Minions, I thought, oh my gosh, these guys are instantly iconic. When did it hit you that the Minions were going to be the phenomenon that they became?
Well, actually, I have nothing to do with the Minions.
Nothing? Wow.
I did come up with the original idea, which did, you know, talk about the Gru and the three little girls and how he would, you know, need these three little Girl Scouts to, you know, to be able for his, you know, world domination plot. And there was mention of the what we could do with Minions, but that credit goes to the directors and creators of the film at Illumination and MacGuff, who came up with these characters. You know, I was, just like you, 2 years after I left the film, I got to see it for the first time, and the Minions were a big surprise to me as well.
Wow, but...
Although, to be fair, the character that I get asked to do the most these days is a Minion, which I don't have anything to do with.
But you got to be amazed, too, at just how this Despicable franchise has gone over the past 10 years. The Minions are everywhere, but Gru and the girls are everywhere as well when it comes to merchandise and specials and all kinds of things.
Absolutely. No. It was. I wasn't expecting that. It came as a complete surprise, you know. It's great. I mean, you know, I probably, if I had stayed on and made the movie, I intended to make it, would have been different, but it's hard to argue with the franchise they built on that, so I'm perfectly fine with the way it went, you know?
Sure, sure, yeah, you've been doing a lot of cool stuff since, including Klaus. Gotta ask you, Sergio, as we're wrapping things up here on this LCJ Q&A episode, what do you really want for Christmas this year?
I want this movie to be seen by as many people as possible. That's really the biggest wish we have right now. It was a labor of love over 9 years, and
wow,
it's great to finally see it come to the audiences. And so far, we've had the opportunity to watch the reaction of a few advanced screenings, and it's been very encouraging. So I'm really hoping that people will connect with it.
Wow, 9 years, 9 Christmases you've gone through. Is this going to be the most relieved one of them all in the last 10 years or so for you?
Hopefully it will be.
Well, I think you'll get your wish, because Netflix is huge, obviously. If you want to see this in theaters, it's in select theaters this weekend, Klaus, and it's on Netflix everywhere, November 15th. Congrats on this, Sergio. Thanks so much for being on the LCJ Q&A today.
Thanks for having me, Jason. Thank you.
You are welcome. I'm Lights, Camera, Jackson. Listen to more of these.
I got my wires crossed with Jason Furman. Sorry, Jackson.
No worries, man. I'm Lights, Camera, Jackson. Thanks for listening to the LCJ Q&A right here on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, and at lights-camera-jackson.com. Happy holidays, and I'll see you next time.